Okay, it's going. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Katie Cooper. I'm a senior in Humanities for Public Service, and I have minors in International Studies as well as Leadership for Social Change. Wow. As far as introductions go, I'm going to grad school this upcoming fall for social work with the intent of being a licensed clinical social worker, so a therapist down the line.
Okay.
But yeah, that's me at the base level in terms of education. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, so I'm going back to VCU for all that, and that'll be really fun for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
VCU was my second choice school.
Yeah.
Before this one, so that's
it's
funny.
Neat. Yeah, all my family's there. My sister goes there right now in her undergrad. She's an English major, and she and I will be tight again. You know, back together.
It's a really cool city.
I love it.
Yeah,
it's really neat. I've discovered it's like the number two most moved to city. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
In the world?
No, I think in like the United States, but like most like college grads will move here more often than not. You know, after.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it deserves it. Honestly.
I heard that through the wire. It could be wrong, but
yeah, still. That's all right. I've also heard a bunch of rumors through the wire, so who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, what made you decide on your topic? Like, what initiated this specific research? Because I was thrilled to pick up this piece because I've never seen anyone quite take that perspective, and I think it's fascinating. So,
thank
I'm curious
you. Yeah.
Why.
Well, it all started, I took a class last semester with Dr. Britt in the College of Religion and Culture, and it's like your senior seminar class. It's a small class, it's a round table discussion type of thing, and it was called Religion and Culture, Work and Labor. So, we took the time to go through all the different kind of subtopics within work and how we view it today and how we used to view it in the past. So it was defining the word work. It was defining the word labor. And then we looked at it through a biblical perspective. We looked at it through a political perspective. We looked at it through a literature perspective. We looked at it all these through these different like lenses, I suppose. And Dr. Britt had his own hypothesis, I guess, of why we have viewed work as this negative, awful thing, why we have viewed labor as this awful thing in modern day. And it was basically us just trying to figure out through these certain texts and readings and perspectives the reason, you know, how we have come to view work today from meetings of the past, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, for example, we looked at, like, Frederick Douglass's work, right, and his perspective on work through slavery.
Okay.
We looked at the Book of Genesis in the Bible. We looked at the term labor and how labor is used for women when they actually go into labor. What does that mean to go into labor?
Yeah.
When a woman gives birth, like, that's work.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked about ideas of transcendence and all these types of different things. And our assignment for this, our semester-long assignment, was to create a research paper. It had to be no more than like 15 pages or something like that on a topic of your choice concerning work and labor.
Okay.
So we had students pick, they talked about like giving birth in the United States. We had someone talk about hustle culture and like black women when it comes to that. We had someone talk about law, which was really neat.
Okay.
But what I wanted to do was something just a little different. I kind of wanted to see, it was almost more of a reaction from my classmates, because like talking about meme culture is, it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, the Karen meme. Everyone knows the Karen meme these days since 2020. So when I had proposed that idea, everyone was like, oh, you have to do that. I have to read that paper. And at first, I was just going to explain Karen. Like, I was going to explain her behavior.
Yeah.
Right? I wasn't going to argue anything. But when I told my idea to Dr. Britt, who I've known since, like, freshman year, he looked at me and he was like, you know, anyone can do that, but what if you defend her instead? And so that was basically my goal, was to try to work an angle and defend Karen. And it was the most challenging thing I've done, because it's very not me. Like, I do not support awful racist women.
Yeah.
But there was something to be said for the attention it had gotten online, at least since 2020. And I had personal connections with Anime as well through my mom, who is a Generation X white woman who is a feminist and is all these things. And having her perspective was actually what helped me write the paper in the first place. So, okay. Yeah.
No, that's really cool. I don't even know. I know we pulled out the paper and we were looking through all the submissions, and then there was this one very long one about Karens and like defending it. And I was like, we gotta like really read this one and see. And it was cool to see sort of the perspective and like, regardless of what anyone really believes, I think it's a really good step because it helps prevent forms of closed thinking and like demagoguery, even if your beliefs don't fully personally align with, you know. I think it's fascinating.
Thank you.
So
appreciate it.
But what you said also sort of segues into the next question, which is, how did your firsthand exposure impact the writing process of this paper as opposed to an academic setting?
Firsthand exposure to like Karen behavior?
Yeah, like you brought up your mom.
Sure. Well, the story really started, my mom and I were in line waiting to get seated at a table in a restaurant like last year, maybe sometime in the spring or summer or something like that. And I had worked in a restaurant before. I was a hostess. So I have perspective being in that young service worker for minimum wage job, just as much as the next person does too. And so had my mom. She like made sandwiches, which from like all through high school, right? So she and I have been in similar places in terms of work. And we are waiting to get seated at a table. But the issue is that no one from the host stand comes over and even acknowledges us. So it's like they're busy as hell.
Yeah.
Like the restaurant is packed, but they're walking to and from the host stand and they're ignoring my mom and I. And when I, you know, my perspective, having been a hostess before, I'm like, they're really busy. They can't talk to me right now. And that's fine. I will wait here. My mom was enraged. She was just like, you can at least acknowledge me if I'm waiting in your line in your restaurant to wait and sit down and pay you for a meal.
Yeah.
And I was like, Mom, it's really not that deep. Like, it's really not that big of a deal. They're really busy. And she was just like, it doesn't matter. It's proper etiquette to be able to do that. And that's when I called her a Karen. I was like, Mom, you're acting like a Karen. And she got really mad at me. And that's what really started it, was this, like, and we had a whole conversation on drive home. My sister was in the back, and my mom was talking about how, like, it doesn't make sense, like, whatever, like, I'm not being a Karen. This is how I was raised, with this idea that you were supposed to pay people with respect.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time I was like, there is something off about the way that service, you know, there's something different about the way that service is done today than it was, I guess, for my mom.
Yeah.
So it's like me lacking her perspective because of my age. Like, I don't know what it's like. And I was like, this could be really interesting to explore further. And so that was really my first interaction with a Karen behavior through my own mom. But you see it everywhere. You see it online. You see it really extreme versions and racist versions. And you see people who are just upset, you know, the Starbucks drive-through where they just splash their drink on the poor barista who's working $9 an hour to pay for school or something like that. So it's interesting. There is such like frustration there. And I'm like, well, why? So that was the Karen behavior that stuck with me the most when I was writing this paper, was my mom.
Yeah.
And her perspective. And
there's a little bit of a kernel of something else.
Right? Yeah.
And I think you did it. You spoke about that really well. Okay, this is sort of a two-parter.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity, and your answer can be nothing, but in your paper, what do you wish was done better and or expanded upon further?
I think that it's like, as soon as I finished writing it, the first draft, and submitted it to my professor for a grade, right, because I was originally just writing this because it was my term paper for the semester.
Yeah.
I got 100 for it. But it was one of those things where it's just like, did I really get 100, or are you just giving me that because I wrote a lot? You know what I mean? I think that if I could have changed anything about the paper, I would have liked to include more about the female experience in terms of, I think, in opposition to men in the patriarchy.
Yeah.
I think I would have liked to talk about more, maybe about the realities that women face in terms of gender-based violence or discrimination or other solid things that would cause frustration in this sense. I do talk about it in the paper. It's not like it's not there, but I think that I could have expanded on more. I remember wishing when I was writing, I was like, I wish I had the knowledge. I wish I had more knowledge about the three topics I had chosen. I wish I could talk more about feminism and what's the specific things experienced, more about consumer culture, because that's something I barely scratched the surface of in my own research.
Yeah.
I would have liked to expand more into it.
Okay.
Because I think there could have been something else there. But the female perspective is important to me.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to learn from it, you know? Like,
there's a ton to learn.
Women's stories are important, and they help to shape culture and our perspectives of each other in the world. So maybe even more interviews. Like, I had one inclusion of an interview I had with one of my sorority sisters at the end of the paper. I think I would have liked to collect more perspective from a woman who would be considered a Karen, right? Who has been called a Karen before. I would have loved to interview her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was harder to do because no one's going to raise their hand and be like, I'm a Karen, and interview you, because that's embarrassing.
It is, yeah.
So those things, like just more things, you know, like in terms of perspective, I think would be my answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then, again, wow, these answers are segueing right into the next questions with such ease. If you were to sum up one main thing you want the readers of your work to get, you're like, if you read this, you can miss everything else, but get that one point.
It might be towards the end. I think understanding that social media and meme culture, it can bring a lot of unity, but it can also create a lot of frustration and sadness for people who don't necessarily deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Like, there's an explanation as to, like, there's a reason behind everyone's behavior, I feel like. So if I looked at someone and say, just read this part of the paper, it would probably be towards the end, where it, basically the generational learning curve is skewed. And try to figure out how to say this. We could all use a little bit more patience when it comes to how fast things are changing.
Yeah.
Because it's scary, not even just for us, but for everybody. And specifically Generation X women, these women who are kind of like middle of the road mothers, they're caretakers for the elderly and caretakers for the young, yet they don't get the support and encouragement that they may need. And that causes their frustration and their reaction in a caring behavior.
Yeah.
When, I don't know, there could be a lot more empathy, I think.
I think there could be a...
Everyone has a mom, right? Yeah. Everyone has a mom, and sometimes they do backbreaking work for you, sometimes they don't. But, I don't know. There is something to say about change and having grace for that change and empathy for people who are trying their best. So
baby
that's what
steps.
I would say. Yeah. Yeah.
I know I've spoken with my mom, I'll keep it super brief, but she's Gen X. And, she's a common theme she's brought up a lot is that middle-aged women in particular, far more than men, are almost like forgotten about and left behind in society.
Yeah.
Which, like, and I wouldn't necessarily call her a Karen, but like she has that same sort of flair in her because of that. And I think it's good that what you say is like we need a little more empathy and patience, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the steps, especially.
Well,
yeah.
The female experience too is also built upon frustration. Like, if I can feel frustrated now, like, imagine how frustrated I'm going to be later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that's really the driver there, is me having that understanding, like, this barest glimpse of aging on top of caring for people, on top of not being heard or paid enough, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
So, like, not a whole lot I can do. other than be angry.
Yeah, and it's okay to be angry. Angry is quite healthy if you know how to not
like
go
fun.
Into a rage mode, right?
It can be fun. Yeah,
it's over or understated importance of that emotion. Okay, three more questions.
Okay.
We'll do a complete shift.
Okay.
What is your favorite book? Just out of curiosity.
My favorite book is The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak.
Okay.
Changed my life. I hated reading all the way through elementary school into like eighth grade. And I was assigned to pick, I was, you know, your summer reading courses in public middle school, right? You're given like three books you can choose from, and I just happened to pick The Book Thief. And I remember reading it and picking it up, and I got it from a neighbor because they were like, we love this book. We've read it so many times, the pages are torn here, please read this. And I was like, okay. I remember sitting on in my backyard, it was like blazing hot in the middle of the summer, and I'm reading this the first two pages, and I'm like, this is so stupid. I hate this so much. And then two nights later, I would be awake at midnight crying my eyes out over this story.
Yeah.
I just loved the complexity, I guess, of human nature, especially during this time from a little girl's perspective. That seemed so relatable, but not. The fact that, have you ever read the book?
I read chunks. I never finished it.
It's told from the perspective of death. It's narrated from the perspective of death during Nazi Germany and the rise of Hitler. So it's this girl and her like foster parents, and they end up taking, you know, she experiences life and she watches her best friend Rudy go through the like the Hitler Youth program, right? And then they take in a Jewish person and they hide him in their basement and they have a beautiful friendship and she learns to read and it's like this whole world that's built and then destroyed. And it's heartbreaking, but it's amazing because I've never read a book from death perspective.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. So that would be my favorite book. I have others too, but in terms of the one that hit me the most, it would definitely have been that one.
Well, I guess now I'm curious. Ones you're like, oh yeah, this one as well, just out of curiosity.
I read A Thousand Splendid Suns this past year.
Okay.
And that's by I don't know if I remember the author's name, but he did The Kite Runner.
Okay.
A Thousand Splendid Suns is also from a female perspective of these two women who grow up in, I believe it's Afghanistan. One is older than the other and they form a friendship through hardship, and I just found it to be a really powerful story. It's like you read it all the way through and you close the book and it's just like the tears just start coming. Yeah. And that's what that was for me, and it was really, really good.
I typically put those two books in the same sort of mental category too.
Yeah,
you know,
well, it's the same setting. It's the same type of story surrounded with, like, you have your religious component with Islam and the political regimes as well in that certain time period. So, like, this was in, like, 1980, 1990 in the Middle East. And same with The Kite Runner. So, in terms of other books, though, The Hunger Games series.
I love The Hunger Games
series. Read that in fifth grade, hooked.
Yeah.
So, like, I did like books at some point, but The Book Thief was, like, I guess the first book that wasn't, like, your fantasy, like, YA fiction that was, like, that just took you for a ride, you know?
It started that trend.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It got the ball really rolling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you read the new, Hunger Games, President Snow, The Ballad of Songbirds
and Snakes? I did. I read that a couple summers ago, and I'm really excited to see the movie. My dear friend, who I'm living with in Richmond, we're like, we're going to the movies. We're going to go. Like, she's like, we're going to dress up. I'm like, I don't know about that one, but, like, I support you.
You have to do the one braid going down.
Yeah, the pin.
Yeah, the pin. Yeah. Well, even though Katniss isn't known as.
Right.
It's like, what, 60 years prior or whatever?
Yeah.
But I love that book, actually, more than I like the trilogy.
It's fantastic.
Because I was obsessed with President Snow as a kid.
Fantastic.
Maybe is a red flag, but we won't go down that road.
That's really interesting. Like, why him, you know?
He's such a brilliantly written villain and antagonist. Like, at no point does he get his hands dirty.
He uses
everyone else to do his thing. He's manipulative, but also at the same time, extremely charming.
Yeah.
And so it's like this really cool mix of, like, typically you think of a villain, like the hack slashing monster alien thing, right?
But yeah.
He's like, you would never know.
Yeah.
You know, if you just met him for the first time, knew nothing about the world, you'd be like, yeah, he's just this really cool, charming old guy.
But yeah.
He's this genocide-inducing leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he's brilliantly written.
It's really good.
You know, and I was, yeah. So anyway.
I agree with you. Totally agree.
All right. What advice would you give for others looking to publish, whether in an academic setting or in a journal setting or a novel, any sort of publishing, doesn't matter, online? If you had advice, what would you?
I'm someone who's really good with constructive criticism. I seek feedback all the time. So my advice is be open to changing your work, because, or if need be, because, yeah, your perspective is important, but until you step outside of your body and then read this as someone else, like, oh, you find, like, 10 other things that could be different and better, you know? Constructive criticism and feedback is a huge part of what I do in general. I'm a part of a mental health peer support circle, and we have to get feedback on, you know, how we care for other people and in these settings as well. So it's something that I'm used to and I look for.
Yeah. That's really good, because a lot of people don't know how to do that, myself included. I'm quite bad at constructive criticism.
Yeah, and my sister is too. Like, it's one of those things too where, like, we're cut from the similar cloth, yet we're very opposite in a sense. Like, if I point out, oh, this could be better, she's just like, no, it's not. Like, it's the defensiveness. It kills me a little. It's funny.
Yeah, but I'm more on, like, the creative side of it, so there's a whole different atmosphere of, like, they're like, I think you should do that. And I'm like, but that's not the story.
Right. That's not my point.
Yeah. But for research and such, I think I'd be more open to it. But
yeah.
I still objectively might struggle with it. Yeah. So that's good advice.
Another piece of advice, too, is listen to, like, just listen to other people, like, what they have to say. Like, it doesn't even have to be constructive criticism or feedback. But, like, if Dr. Britt had never said, like, you could do this, but what if you did this? I wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. That's all I said about that.
Okay. And last question, then. And it's an open-ended question. Is there anything else you would like to share or say about your work, yourself, school, publishing, life? Advice, wisdom, a message, your favorite color, anything. Putting you a bit on the spot.
No, it's a good question. I would say sophomore year me, like sophomore college Katie, would be like, what the hell, you know, right now, like, how did all this happen? I don't know. My advice is do things, push yourself to do things that you would otherwise be uncomfortable doing, because you learn so much from it. Just try. Like, it doesn't hurt to try new things. If you fail, like, you fail and you walk away and you learn something from it. Like, there's never a bad experience for just trying something new. For anyone interested in publishing, this is still my first go around at it, right? I hope to do more. I think this would be fun. This has given me a glimpse into, you know, it's so funny. I was talking to a professor in the College of Religion and Culture. I shared with him that my paper got accepted for publication with the journal, and he was like, wow, this is so exciting. I was like, I know. Now I almost, like, kind of wish I was going not necessarily down the social work direction, but maybe into, like, more humanities driven research and culture studies. And he was just like, you could always go back and do that afterwards. And so I would consider doing research type things for the rest of my life now, just because I'm like, wow, this was a really positive experience and something I truly enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
So, and it's so funny the way that I wrote this paper in the first place. I had all semester to prepare, and I did all my research and all my notes and stuff like that. And then when I actually sat down with it, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to write this. It was Thanksgiving break, and I was sitting with my mom on the couch, and I was just like, what is this angle that I need to take in order to make this a solid paper? And then she told me about her personal struggles, and that's how it just took off. I took an entire weekend. It was literally after I had gotten back from Thanksgiving break, sat down for an entire weekend here in the library, packed a lunch and just cranked out this paper.
Yeah.
And I would never have pictured myself doing that. I guess be open to new things and trying new things and trying even if it doesn't work, because you learn something from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen?
Exactly.
You know, they say no or it doesn't work out. It's
okay. That's very true. Yeah. That's my I guess last thing.
And the fact that you banged this out in a week, I mean,
thank you.
Bravo. Thank you. Bravo. That's extremely impressive speed.
Well, and it's so funny, I feel like I cracked open the Pandora's box with this. Now I'm just like, well, if I could do this in this short period of time, like, what else can I do?
What can I do in a week, you know?
What can I do in 2 weeks? What could I do in a month? What could I do with other people who are just as interested in the topic as I am? I could collaborate with other, you know, other students or graduate students or professors even, and actually conduct legit research. Like, there's another idea that I have been really, really interested in learning more about through Dr. Britt and his work with the Appalachian Prison Book Project. Do you know that?
Yeah.
So he gets these letters from the program, which is based in at West Virginia University. And they get all of these letters from incarcerated individuals across all of Appalachia. And in these letters, they get so many requests for Wicca, for pagan religion.
Yeah.
And he was talking to me about how fascinating this is, that they're asking for things like Norse mythology and Wicca and paganism, because in the laws, like the legal structure, not legal structure, but in the rules of the Wicca books and these types of things, it actually says you need to be outside in order to practice your religion. So people claiming Wicca as their religion gives them outside time while they're in jail.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just fascinating. And this is something that, like, if I had been given the time and the free rein, and I would love to conduct research on this and write about it.
That's fascinating.
I know.
I worked at Blacksburg Books for a while, mm-hmm. and we housed the Prison Project donations. And there was a lot of speculation about why there was so much Wicca. And it's maybe a part of a lot of bias and assumptions and generalizations, but I also know a lot of that stuff is oftentimes associated with, like, white supremacy.
Yes, so the Norse mythology, actually, there is something to do with Odinism.
Yeah.
That we actually can't really send those books anymore because there are new, like, neo-Nazi symbols that are tied to Odinism. Like,
okay, wow.
And people try to claim that in terms of, like, white supremacy, you know, it's a whole thing. I don't know enough about it to talk about it, but it is something that we're aware of, and interesting to see when people ask for these books, like, are you actually curious in Norse mythology or are you a white supremacist?
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You only get a letter with the request and a thank you, and then you have to send something off. So, but it's really interesting nonetheless. And I will say too, with the whole Wicca thing and being able to be outside, like, have, like, mandated outside time, that is also just a speculation. It's nothing actually confirmed.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty good hypothesis.
It is a really good hypothesis. I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah, and that was Dr. Britt's idea, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
I wonder if that's working.
Like, I don't know.
We should try and fight.
Well, religion in America is a fascinating thing. I took a whole class about that my junior year here, and it's the way that that's why I love religion and culture studies in general. Like, I love what I do here because it's fascinating. No one ever actually talks about how different the religious experience in America is in comparison to other places in the world, because we have a mandated right to practice your religion free of discrimination from anybody else. But what does that entail? Like, when it comes down to the fine details.
Where's that line, right? Because I know there's, like, you can't sacrifice human beings or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there is a line, but it's farther out. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you take in things like recreational drug use as a part of this, like how certain native tribes will use, like, ayahuasca or certain, like, psychedelic drugs as a part of their rituals. And so because of your First Amendment right to practice your freedom of religion, they're like, if you have a quarter, you know, blood content of native identity or native, you know, heritage here, then you can actually practice this. But if you don't, then you're arrested. So it's just weird, specific things that anywhere else in the world you won't find. It's just here.
Wow. that'd be fascinating to learn about. Mm-hmm. I love religion and learning about it, but I've never actually done anything. I've done my own personal research, like I've read Bible cover to cover, and I've read these sort of things and these laws and ideas, but I've never taken anything academic, and I think that would be it's not in my major, so
it's really neat.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you
fun.
Carry this on. I'm a massive fan, and everyone else is, but I was the one where we picked out the ones we were accepting, and they're like, does anyone have any ones they really want to take? And I was like, give me the Karen one. Like, give me that one. I want that one. So we're happy to have you be a part of the journey.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I was really excited to see. I actually had an opportunity to get this published because in November or December of 2022, I was just like, I don't really know where I would put this other than into the hands of Dr. Britt. And my good friend who I made read the paper, she was just like, you can get this published. I was like, I don't know. I don't have that opportunity. And all of a sudden, boom, an email in my inbox and a forward message from my professor. He was like, you should do this. I was like, okay, I guess. So
funny how that all works out,
right? I know. I'm very grateful that it did.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. And it's a brilliant paper. I mean,
thank you.
Absolutely well done. Thanks. So. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm happy to do this. I'm done with you. I don't have to say.